Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts. Each week at this time, Information Please supplies you with four experts. You shoot us questions with the right answers, and we bat them out at our authorities. You may submit from one to three original questions per letter. If your question is used, you receive $5, and $10 additional if it stumps the board. So you may win $15 in all. Don't get hot and bothered if our editorial staff changes or edits your question slightly. All questions become the property of Information Please. Letters with questions are to be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Now here's our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience, you are listening to a program which is as free as the wind, unrehearsed, and unpredictable. On our board of authorities this evening, we have three veterans, the amazing expert on everything, including sports, Mr. John Kieran, the famous versifier and columnist to the New York Post, Mr. Franklin P. Adams, better known as FBA, and our irrepressible authority on music, movies, and what have you, Mr. Oscar Levant, recent winner of new laurels as the musical director of the new smash hit, The American Way. As our guest of honor, Information Please is proud to announce the name of an American known from coast to coast as public servant, Scripps Howard journalist, hard-hitting controversialist, General Hugh Johnson. And this is a good time to announce that General Johnson is chairman of the Greater New York Committee for the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, a worthy leader of a worthy cause. Now, that looks like a pretty solid quartet, but they're not infallible. If or when they miss, Canada Dry's cash register will ring up $10, going out to the clever questioner. All right, gentlemen, here we go. The first question comes from Miss Susan B. Dunn of Scarsdale, New York. She wants you to quote, to give five familiar expressions which place animals or insects in unusual surroundings. For example, a fly in the ointment. Let's have five more like that. Mr. Kieran.
Well, Kieran. I'll take it. A dog in the manger.
Dog in the manger is all right. That'd be very good. That's one. Mr. Levant.
The one about ants.
In the?
Ants
in the pants. The thing to do, of course, if you have ants in the pants, isn't this right, General Johnson, to have iron pants? Yeah. That would be two. Mr. Adams.
A bee in the bonnet.
Bee in the bonnet, yes. That's three. Mr. Levant.
Kitten on the keys.
Kitten on the keys, the musical one. That's four.
My racket.
Thanks for the plug. One more.
Fly in amber.
A fly in amber. Very good, General Johnson. General Johnson, do you ever have any trouble placing a blue eagle in unusual surroundings at any time? Speaking of five...
Put him in a good many surroundings. That yeah. Ants in pants business was ants of conscience in the pants.
Oh, you're breaking down and confessing all this evening, General, eh? Thank you very much. That's five out of five. Let's see what you can do with the next one. This comes from Mr. A. Linscott of Atlanta, Georgia. Suppose you were called upon as a judge to pass upon the constitutionality of the following three acts. What would you decide? One, the president appoints a physician to the Supreme Court bench. Constitutional? Unconstitutional. General Johnson.
Constitutional.
How would you explain that?
Because there's no requirement whatever that the appointees to the Supreme Bench will be a lawyer.
Yes, they just happen to be, by more or less by accident.
They, a lot of them happen to be members of Congress, too.
Yes. Two, the House of Representatives, this seems like a pretty good idea, the House of Representatives chooses Groucho Marx to be its speaker. That's better than Harpo Marx, anyway. Chooses Groucho Marx to be its speaker. Constitutional, unconstitutional? General Johnson.
Unconstitutional.
Why would it be unconstitutional?
Because the Speaker of the House has got to be a member of the House.
Is that true?
That is true.
Well, now, I may be wrong about this, but I understand that in Article 1, Section 2, Clause 5, just came to me like a bolt from the blue... The Constitution merely states that the House of Representatives may choose their own speaker and other officers, and does not indicate that those that the speaker must necessarily come from the House, so the tradition is...
No, but the implication is so strong in the fact that the man has a vote under certain circumstances,
true.
They certainly couldn't reach out and appoint a man to the Speaker of the House who hadn't been elected by any constituency, he would have a vote on any legislation.
That seems perfectly reasonable to me. That's but it still might be constitutional to have Groucho Marx as the speaker.
I'm against it.
Well, that's one vote against Groucho Marx.
I'm for it. We split.
The a citizen in New York sues Senator Spellbinder for a slanderous attack made on the radio. Is such a suit constitutional or unconstitutional? I have to count you wrong on that second one, by the way. General Johnson.
Well, it isn't really a question of whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional. The question is whether he can recover or not.
Well, the question is whether...
I believe that he can recover on the ground that a statement made outside of the official duties of a congressman or senator is actionable. Of course, it clearly is not actionable if it's made in connection with a debate on the floor of either house or in connection with his official duties.
That's quite right. The congressmen are not liable for what they say on the floor of the house. But they are liable for statements made elsewhere. Maybe they ought to be kept permanently elsewhere. That's possible. That's two out of three. I think that's going to cost Canada Dry $10. Unless we get some constitutional authority to declare you right on question number two. Thank you. The next question from Miss Cora W. Forsberg of Seattle, Washington. Now, this is a literary question. I hope the general, who is a literary authority, as many people do not know, is going to come in on this one. How do the following characters, who appear in well-known poems, meet their deaths in those poems? You've got to get 4 out of 5 on this. 1. Elaine.
Elaine the Lovely, the Lily Maid of Astley?
Don't sell her to me, Oscar. Miss Kieran.
Well, she died of grief and was put on a barge and floated down the river, down the Thames River.
Yes. In what poem?
The dead, oared by the dumb, went upward with the flood.
That's very pretty, Mr. Levant.
That's
Kieran,
from like Idylls of the King by Tennyson.
I think from The Lady of Shalott. Would it be The Lady of Shalott?
No, sir.
From Idylls of the King. I beg your pardon. You're quite
carried
right.
Carried a torch.
That's one. 2, the gingham dog and the calico cat. How do they meet their death? The gingham dog and the calico cat, Mr. Kieran. Careful now. Let me get you nervous, Mr. Kieran.
They tore each other to pieces.
Not quite. Not quite. Mr. Adams, are you shaking your head at that ruefully?
Never heard of them.
Yes, you have. They're in your line. It was written by a great hero of yours. Poem written by one of your...
They died from neglect. They were...
No. sorry, General. May have been an idea. They ate each other up. It's from the famous poem about the gingham dog and the calico cat known as The Duel by Eugene Field, Mr. Adams.
I started to tell you that, and you wouldn't let me finish.
Did you have another sentence on the tip of your tongue? Oh, you come back next week, and I'll collect
it. I usually can get it out.
That's one wrong. How did Minnie Ha Ha die? Minnie Ha Ha.
That's a flower to bake cake.
No, Minnie Ha Ha isn't a flower, is it really?
No, I'm wrong.
Part of it is.
He starved.
General Johnson. Starved to death, yes. Minnie Ha starved to death. From what poem?
Hiawatha.
Yes, in Longfellow's Song of Hiawatha.
Gucci Woochie.
That's 2 right out of 3. What are you muttering to yourself, Mr.
The poem by Longfellow. On the shores of Gucci Hoochie.
I think I ought to give you a chance to recite that for us this evening. How did Gunga Din die? Gunga Din.
Okay.
Mr. Kieran.
Knocked a bullet with his skin.
Yes, a bullet come and drilled the beggar clean. From what poem?
Gunga Din.
Yes, of course. I hinted it to you. And who wrote Gunga Din?
The late Rudyard Kipling.
Very good. Now we have to get the next one right or we fail. The crew of the Nancy Bell. How did the crew of the Nancy Bell die, Mr. Adams?
They ate each other up.
Who did? Who ate whom?
Calico.
The cook and the captain bold and the mate of the Nancy Brig.
Yes.
Bosun tight and the midshipman might.
Crew of the captain's gig.
Yes. Well, who was left? Anybody left?
An ancient seaman.
Yes, there was one surviving sailor. I beg pardon?
Me.
Me?
And only me and the cook was left. And the delicate question, which of us two goes to the pot, arose, and we argued it out as such. And me won.
Atta boy. That's right. Me what? Nice work if you can.
An elderly naval man he was.
I know they want to go through this whole poem. I don't know how I'm going to head them off. The only way to head them off is to go on to the next question. Well, we got 4 out of 5 on that. The next question comes all the way from California, Berkeley, California. Mr. John Caffrey sends it in. Now, let's see what we can do with this. One man will have to answer these two questions. I'll read the two questions. Two horses compete in a mile race. One holds the record for running, the other for trotting. On which would you place your bet, and why? I'll read the next question, because the man who raised his hand has to answer both questions. Now, you digest that. Two, presuming each to be a champion in his class, who can broad jump the farthest, a frog or a man? By the way, this question comes to us from Mr. William Halsey of Grand Prairie, Edmonton, Canada. Now, who wants to take that question? Or rather, those two questions. General Johnson, very good. The
record for a running horse is much less time than the record for a trotting horse.
You'd place your bets, therefore,
on the running horse.
Very shrewd of you. That's quite right, General. Do you know the exact time, Mr. Kieran, for the
I think the running time is about 1:34 and a fraction, and the pacing and trotting time are about 1:56.
That's remarkable. The exact figures are 1:34 and 2/5. And 1:55 and 1/4, which is hitting the nose practically. Very good. Very good indeed, Mr. Kieran. Now the second one. General, you have to take the second part of the question. Presuming each to be a champion in his class, who can broad jump the farthest, a frog or a man?
A man.
A man. Want to give us some figures on that?
I'm just guessing.
All right,
I think the broad jump goes to about 17 feet for a man, and a frog can't jump more than 4 or 5.
A little more than that, I think. Mr. Kieran, do you want to enlarge the general figures?
I should say 26 feet 8 and a fraction inches for Jesse Owens.
26 feet 10, to be exact.
Well,
in 1935. That's near enough.
That's running.
Boy, that's some going. How about the frog?
Running broad jump.
What's the record for a frog? Record for a frog? Don't you cover frog jumps at all, Mr.
Why, Mark Twain forgot to give the statistics of his
That's
frog.
Right. But to celebrate,
he's
as a matter of fact,
shot,
now that you speak of Mark Twain, to celebrate that famous story of the jumping frog, in 1938 they held a frog jumping carnival, and a frog jumped 15 feet, 10 inches.
It was fixed.
You think so? They hit the whole race. As a matter of fact, it's a very inferior performance, because in order to make the frog jump, you have to tickle him, but you don't have to tickle Jesse Owens, do you, Mr. Kieran? Jumps by himself. Very good, General Johnson. Thank you. I hope you're not a betting man, General Johnson.
Not on frogs. Shot in their stomachs.
Next question comes to us from John Caffrey of Berkeley, California. Our pianist is going to play some passages of three famous compositions. Now, Mr. Levant, and only Mr. Levant, is asked to prove that he recognizes them, not by words, but by playing on the second piano a principal theme of each. That sounds like a tough one to me. Get over to the piano there, Mr. Levant. Now, the pianist is going to play some passages of three famous compositions. Let's have the first one. Mr. Levant has to go on. Yeah, that's right enough. It's, of course, from Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C minor.
I like to play the whole piece.
You want to do that? Some other program, Mr. Levant. All right, let's have number two. That's pretty. Go ahead, spoil it, Mr. Levant. I guess that's right enough.
That's Schumann. Schubert Unfinished Symphony.
Very good.
That isn't the main theme. That's the second movement.
Would you like to go on to the main theme?
Why not? They do those poems all day.
Oh, let's have a few notes of the main theme. Oh, that sounds much mainer than the other. Yes, I like that. That's very good. All right, let's have number three.
Beethoven.
I know, but that's not playing it.
That's the introduction, I think, to the A minor, the Seventh Symphony of Beethoven.
All right, let's have the major theme. That's right enough?
It's
okay.
Not enough for me.
All right, Mr. Levant, come on right back. Come on, we want to get some of these other boys in now.
Hmm?
Once you get them at a piano, you can't get them away from them. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant. Now, let's see what you can do with this one. Mrs. Harry Propson of Chicago, Illinois, wants you to give an up-to-date equivalent for each of the following examples of grandma's slang. Better make that grandpa, just in case there are some grandmas listening in. There are four of them. No, five of them. Let's see if we can get five out of five. In Dutch. What would be the modern equivalent for in Dutch? Raise hands. Mr. Carey.
On the spot.
I don't think exactly. It's pretty good.
In the doghouse.
In the doghouse. Yes, General Johnson. There's a wry smile on General Johnson's face. In the doghouse is correct. Two, humdinger. Humdinger. Mr. Levant.
It's a wow.
Yes, a wow or a knockout. Very good. The merry ha-ha. The merry ha-ha. Mr. Levant.
The Bronx chair.
Yes.
Blue. I can't do
you
it.
You can't do it. Thank heaven. You want to do it on the piano?
No.
No, good. A cad. A cad.
A rat.
A rat be all right. Better than a rat.
Well, Basil Rathbone in any picture.
No, better than a rat.
Rathbone?
Rathbone.
One of our distinguished guests. Goodness gracious.
Makes a lot of money being a rat.
I think a rat's all right. A heel would be better, perhaps. A heel. And do you remember the old expression which I never have known how to pronounce? Pshaw. 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 Pshaw.
Raise on nerds.
Nerds. Very good. General. General Johnson. Thank you very much. Now, at this point, a careful statistical checkup reveals that Canada Dry has lost a grand total of $10. And now, how about lending an ear, or better still, a pair of ears, to our Canada Dry expert, Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. When we trace the history of civilization back to its beginnings, we find that it has progressed step by step with man's hospitality toward his fellows. For when a man discovered a good thing in life, he invited his friends to come to his abode and share it with him.
Careful, Mr. Cross. First thing you know, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be showing up at my apartment. They do that, you know, at the drop of a hat or a hint.
Well, I think you'd better be prepared for them, Mr. Fadiman, because I'm sure you've discovered a good thing in life. I mean, of course, sparkling Canada Dry water, that delicious club soda which adds so much life to your favorite drink. Yes, the secret of giving long life to your drink has finally been discovered. The secret is Canada Dry's pinpoint carbonation, which means millions of smaller bubbles, lasting liveliness, extra tastiness. And sparkling Canada Dry water will still be sparkling even after the bottle has been opened for 24 hours. So, for the utmost in hospitality, be sure when ordering club soda to specify sparkling Canada Dry water.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. You sparkled that one off in 58 seconds. Now we'll get back to our inquisition. Let's see what Mr. R.M. Green in New Rochelle, New York, wants you to do. Is there a bugler in the house? Yes, there is. I'm going to ask the bugler to play five bugle calls as used in the Army. Now, I know that Mr. Levant, like that one, General? I know Mr. Levant is the only one of the board.
I can't tell if they're going up or down, otherwise I know.
Well, now you just keep your ears open.
They're all taps to me.
Well, you, the General, you don't have to bother with bugle calls.
Doesn't he ever hear a bugle call?
Oh.
Let's see what he can do with these five. All right, let's have the first one. Mr. Adams.
Mess call.
Mess call. Now, hold your seats, gentlemen. Hold your seats. Hold your seats. Sandwiches and Canada Dry ginger ale will be served after 9 p.m. Mess is right. Now, the next one. Mr. Kieran. Veteran Kieran.
I think that's to the colors.
To the colors is quite correct. Third. General Johnson.
First call.
Very good. Thank you, General. The next. General Johnson.
Assembly.
I beg your pardon?
Assembly.
Assembly. Yes, I get it. I get
like
it.
Tiger Rag.
All right. That's a corporal's voice, not a general's voice, General Johnson.
I think you better ask John these. He knows them better than I do.
Isn't he good, though? All right, let's have the fifth and last. But, Mr. Adams.
Taps.
I beg your pardon? Ooh, taps for you, Mr. Adams. Taps for you, General Johnson.
Tattoo.
I beg pardon?
Tattoo.
That wouldn't be the same as retreat.
No. Retreat is right.
Well, now, Corporal Adams and General Johnson are both wrong on that, I'm sorry to say.
Ex-Saddler Kieran is correct.
Attaboy. You came in a little too late. Let's see, we were only to get 4 out of 5 on that, so that'll be okay. I guess you've never heard retreat, have you, General Johnson?
It's the most welcome call in the whole list.
See what you can do with this one. And this comes from Mr. G. Keeler of Windsor, Connecticut. Name the novels or plays in which the following trials occur. One, There's a remarkable resemblance between the prisoner and one of his lawyers. And this aids the defense. Mr. Kieran.
Tale of Two Cities.
Yes.
Sidney Carton and Lucy Manette's husband.
Charles Darnay.
Right.
Yes, that's quite. That's very good.
Far better thing. Kieran answered it.
Yes. Do you want to go ahead and give us that?
No, I was going to answer that one.
No? Just knew a quotation from it,
yeah,
eh?
Far.
You wait a while. We get a couple of quotations for you a little later on in the program. The second one. The defendant, believing himself guilty of murder, is proved innocent by a small boy's testimony. Where's that come from? Mr. Kieran.
Mark Twain.
Yes, the name of the book?
The name of the book was Huckleberry Finn,
yes,
I think.
The other one. Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer.
The Indian.
Good. Tom Sawyer.
Injun
yes,
Joe.
Right. Remember Muff Potter, who was accused of murdering Judge Robinson? And he was proved innocent, and it was proved that Injun Joe slipped a knife in Potter's hand while Potter was asleep.
Right.
I've got them all under a spell, ladies and gentlemen. Three, the court punishes the prisoner for his wish by making the wish come true. General Johnson.
Man without a country.
Yes,
Philip
indeed.
Mellon.
Very good. The one who wished never to see his country again and was granted his wish. The judge, in a breach of promise case, settles the matter by marrying the plaintiff himself. Mr. Adams.
Trial by jury.
Yes, our Gilbert and Sullivan authority comes to bat, knocks out a homer. Very good. Five and last. Monsieur Fleuriot is the lawyer for Madame Fleuriot, who is charged with murder. General Johnson.
Madam Mayor.
Very good. Very good, General Johnson. What do you do with your spare time, General Johnson? See Madam X. By the way, who wrote Madam X, General? Do you know?
I can't tell you that.
Neither do I. Anybody know?
Frenchman.
Yes, I know that. I may have been Herbieu, may have been Brio. We'll get 100 letters tomorrow.
Brio, I think.
I don't know. 100 letters will come tomorrow explaining how ignorant we are, I'm sure. Well, that's 5 out of 5. Very good. Have to get these boys down tonight. They're too bright. The next one from Rochester, New York, from Mr. S. Norton, is a musical problem, and one man has to answer it. The following musical selection, which we're going to have played, is composed of parts of 4 different songs. You have to identify each of the parts. Now, one man must answer the question correctly with no stumbling. Go right to it.
But I'd rather you played it again.
All right.
It starts out like Tchaikovsky, but it's really My Heart Sits Still, which is what they call an unconscious influence. Dick Rogers wrote it.
You're criticizing your colleagues, are you?
Yes, my first time I can criticize Dick Rogers. An unconscious influence, but it's My Heart Stood Still from the Connecticut Yankee.
Very good. And that's one. Now we have 3 more to name.
Go ahead, let's hear it.
All right, let's have a little, let's have that again.
Please. That's Gershwin. Love walked in.
Love walked right
in. The Goldwyn Follies.
The Goldwyn Follies. That's number 2.
Small hotel. Yum. Dick Rogers. No unconscious influence.
No unconscious influence. Nice judgment this evening, Mr. Levant. That's a small hotel. That's right. From what show? Do you remember?
Small hotel was On Your Toes.
Very good. Now, there's only one more to name.
That was that da-da-da-dee-da-da-da-da. FDR Jones.
Yeah, Frank Lee Roosevelt
Jones. Sing Out the News.
Sing Out the News. Thank you very much, Mr. Levant.
They were all in the news.
That's pretty good. The next question. Oh, this is a good one. From Dr. Saul R. Kelson of the Massachusetts General Hospital, Boston, Massachusetts. Don't be depressed. Question, what have the following in common? 1. Daniel D. Tompkins. 2. Richard M. Johnson. 3. William R. King. 4. William A. Wheeler. Don't tell me they all have middle initials, because that's not what I'm after. What else have they in common?
W.
No, there's no W in Daniel D. Tompkins. General Johnson.
I don't know about that, but I'd like to call attention to this audience and the radio audience to this drive for infantile paralysis that this
Why not,
has asked everybody to turn in their dime cards before the end of the month.
It's a very good time to bring that to the attention of the radio audience. Now, don't you blush, General Johnson. That's perfectly all right. We're glad to have that appeal made. But, General Johnson, that doesn't get you out of answering the question, you know. It's a nice appeal, but you have to tell me what the following have in common. Tompkins, Johnson,
again.
King,
I just
Will.
Had to get that in while I could.
What have they in common?
Say them again.
You like the names. Daniel D. Tompkins, Richard M. Johnson, William R. King, William A. Wheeler. They don't ring a bell in your mind?
They're all men.
Yes, yes. That's pretty good, General. Not quite good enough.
They all got three names.
That's not enough either, Mr.
Nobody
Levant.
Knows who anyone is.
Goodness
That's
gracious.
Kind of a...
Four reputable American citizens. Reasonably reputable. And don't know who these gentlemen are.
They never heard of me.
Four are extremely important men in the history of our country. What they have in common is that they were all vice presidents of the United States. That's all. Canada Dry. We'll lose $10 on that. Goodness gracious.
Nobody could answer that question.
Apparently not, General. At least four people couldn't. General, how would you like to come back on our program some other time? We'll try you again on that. What can you do with this one? This comes from Mr. A.H. Sakier of New York City. Now, one man must define these three terms. The terms sound rather alike. Here they are. Berry-berry, cheery-berry, harakiri. General Johnson, want to take that one?
Berry-berry is a disease that comes from... eating too much unpolished rice?
Not unpolished, would you say?
I mean polished rice.
Yes, an exclusive diet of polished rice. That's
and
right.
Cherry berry is a part of an Italian song that doesn't mean much of anything.
Very good,
more than la, la, la. And what was the other one? Harry
Carey. I didn't know you were a music
critic,
too.
Japanese suicide.
Yes, it's for self-disembowelment. Japanese cure for a stomachache. 3 out of 3. That's very good. It's tough getting these boys down. Let's see what we can do, with this one. Name the occupation which is brought to mind by each of the three following pieces to be played by the pianist. Let's have one.
That's from an opera.
Yes, what opera?
The Barber of Seville.
Yes, and the occupation is a barber. All right, let's have the next. Number two.
Mr. Adams Alley.
It is up Mr. Adams Alley. How about it, Mr. Adams? You can whistle it, but we have to have words on this program.
Let's have a little
music.
More of it.
Want a little more of that? Fond of music on you, General. Oh, let him have a little more. Mr. Adams.
Policeman.
Very good. A policeman's lot is not a happy one from Gilbert and Sullivan's Policeman's Chorus. And let's have the next. Mr. Kieran.
Happy farmer.
Yes, a farmer. I think we have another one. Let's have four. Mr. Levant?
The peanut vendor.
Yes, from the well-known song of the same name, the peanut vendor. And fifth and last. Mr. Adams, did you have it?
He's a juggler.
I beg pardon? No, that's wrong.
The umbrella man.
Oh, but you got it the second time. That's going to cost,
I was being cute. I know.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Mr. Levant. In that case, we'll allow you the benefit, the courtesy of information, please.
Mr. Adams.
Very good. Okay. 5 out of 5. That's all we'll have time for tonight. That means Canada Dry is set back to the tune of $20. In a moment, I'll give you the lineup for next week at this time, but in the meantime, Mr. Cross has a word to say.
Many of you have already obtained the Information Please game, which has been prepared for you by Canada Dry. You can play Information Please in your home, just as we do here in the studio, with 4 times as many questions as we have in one of our broadcasts. You'll get a big kick out of stumping those neighborhood experts. So listen carefully while I tell you what you have to do to get your copy of the Information Please game. Tear the labels from 2 bottles of any of Canada Dry's many beverages. Don't worry if you're unable to get them off in one piece. Just make sure the pieces are fairly large. Then mail both labels, or pieces of labels, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. If you live in Canada, the address is Canada Dry, Toronto, Canada. Send for your game of Information Please tonight, because it's a lot of fun. And just one thing more. Along with those 2 labels and 10 cents, don't forget to include your own name and address. Believe it or not, some people do.
Thanks, Mr. Cross. Ladies and gentlemen, next week at this time, the board of experts will consist of our 2 anchor men, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran, and 2 guests of honor. One of them has ranged all over the intellectual map. He's been music critic, book critic, drama critic, editor, political commentator, writer of many books that deal brilliantly with the American scene. I'm referring to Mr. Gilbert Seldes. And our second guest will be an alert young woman who is helping to switch the fashion limelight from Paris to our own country. Next week, the author of that bestseller, Fashion is Spinach, will be with us, Miss Elizabeth Hawes. One last word. Remember that letters with questions are to be addressed only to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Canada Dry, ginger ale, sparkling water, lime Ricky, and Tom Collins mixer come in convenient size bottles for every occasion. These exceptionally fine beverages are economical, too, for the largest bottle, the family size, costs only 15 cents plus usual deposits. This is Milton Cross saying good night for Canada Dry.